yourself. You just need to do the normal starting bit.
Okay. Hi everyone, welcome to the Forest School podcast. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Lewis.
Here we are in our woodland. It's Friday lunchtime. I am carving spoon and we're about to have lunch and we're just going to have a chat and record it at the same time.
And I'm looking at this tree here that's incredibly dead.
Oh yeah,
and probably
been
should come down.
Nibbled. Look at the bark. Yeah. Yeah. What are we talking about today?
15 minute job. what are we talking about? We're talking about, having now done this, I've been doing Forest School for coming up 3 years. And you've been doing it for
2 years.
2 years. Yeah. And we're talking about what would we, if we could go back and talk to ourselves, maybe not right at the start, because I do think there's an element to just do something. Do a couple of sessions, mm-hmm. and then you can appreciate more. Because I think that's, we're talking about what you would say to yourself at the start, but I do think there's an element of, like if you've never done any Forest School, and then however you do your Forest School training, if it's a block of 5 days, or if it's a, some people do it every Monday, or every, you know, one day a week for a long time.
Yeah.
I think until you have spent some time with children, it's all just theory and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I think you need to, a bit like we were saying there, but you know, what do you do in a hermetically sealed, it's like when you were teaching, do you ever used to do like the perfect lesson plan?
Yeah.
You'd be like, this is amazing, but my kids will not go for this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you need to have something so that you can understand the reality of it, not just the holy grail, this is the perfect Forest School and all the children are always interested in your activities and respectful of nature all the time and never fall out.
Yep.
So I think I've got a few, but I think if we go maybe just back and forth.
Yeah.
So I think the first one that I would say to myself, and I was starting out, was would be to listen to the environment more, in the most hippie sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
In that I think I did the... I was already doing outdoor education when I did my Forest School training, with a view that I would eventually be doing Forest School.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I was also starting a business at the same time, I was so desperate to maybe prove my worth, prove that I was worthwhile to the school, to the children, to the whatever else it was, that my whole philosophy for longer than I would like to admit was, I'm going to bring things in,
yep.
and we're going to play with them,
yep.
in this setting. So it was like, I was in the corner of a school field, there was some willow, it was like a little willow circle, and you know, some little bug hotels and stuff. And I did like, but I didn't do any willow crafts at all. And looking back at it now, and I'm just going, why, there was nothing but willow, and I did no willow craft. I brought in... Like, I went and got wood and made spoon blanks and brought spoon blanks in, and they loved it and they loved doing spoon carving and stuff. But now I'm like, what were you doing? You weren't connecting them to the environment at all.
Yeah.
And actually, but then I do think a part of that is when you're going to a school setting, you don't necessarily have as much time to sit and get on the same frequency as the setting. You know, you are expected to kind of drop in, go, do whatever.
Yeah, so you're not noticing the seasonal change in that place so much because you're only there with the kids when you're running your session.
Yeah.
You haven't got time to digest what's going on
and
around you.
And if you're not careful, you can turn up, you know, very shortly, with enough time to set up, and then you go home quite quickly because you're tired at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And even though it would suck at the time, it would probably have been really valuable to have sat there either in the morning for 20 minutes or after I'd finished, packed all my stuff away, and then just sat and looked at the site and thought, what's going to be here next week? What's mm-hmm. it going to do? And I think that's what I see a lot of new people to Forest School doing, is asking, what activity can I do? And it's difficult because the answer is always, we don't know your site.
Yeah.
And so... get to know your site, I think, is what I would tell myself. And because I was working in a few schools, and I think I should have been doing more specific stuff to this school site has this and this school site has that.
Well, that makes me think, actually, one of the things I would tell myself is is pretty similar, because looking back on my first sessions that were in schools, the amount of time I spent planning and prepping particular activities or particular resources was insane. And probably the way to get around that would have been to do, as you're saying, is to just use what's already there and plan accordingly, and give myself more space and have more faith in play at the beginning. But it's very hard to say that, isn't it? When you're moving from one philosophy, which is kind of state school based, you know, you need a plan and you need every minute of the lesson to be filled with activity and which has an objective and all that kind of malarkey, to then suddenly go, yep, okay, this is child-led and this is play-based and it's worthy. And of course we all believe that, and that's why we go into forest school, but to actually live that and see that and be able to defend it, especially if you're in a school setting, does take a bit of time, because it takes time from observing those children and going, wow, okay, look at what they're learning that I haven't planned for, that is learning that has emerged, you know, despite my activities that I've brought.
In spite of your activities, yeah.
So yeah, I would do the same.
But that's a very difficult thing to do, isn't it? Very early on, it's a very difficult thing to have that much faith in yourself. But whether actually it's not about having faith in yourself, it's about having faith in the children.
Yeah.
And it's so, I mean, because you could look at it one way and go, am I confident enough that I can make stuff up on the spot and plan with this and go with the flow? But actually, can I go, well, am I confident that the children will find something to play with?
Yeah, that's true, because there often are children that don't find anything to play with, and they come up to you and go, I don't know what to do now. But to know that that's also fine, and to know that it's fine for them to be bored, and it's fine for them to have that absence of planned activity, that is really healthy too. And it's those children that you often see have the most, you know, gain the most and have...
That's obviously the most, sometimes the most telling thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when 3-5 minutes into a session, and somebody comes up and is, what are we doing? I'm bored, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And you shouldn't, and I look at that and go, wow, you are down to like 5 minutes unplanned, and you can't handle it. So that's your limit. Okay, I wonder if I can stretch you now into, you know, whatever else it is.
Yeah.
I guess it does feed into it. So I think I would have, at the start, this is less to do with forest school and more to do with like a forest school business, is I think I would try it. I would try to have talked to myself, and it would have been very difficult to have lots of business things say this, just not say yes to everything. Because often when you start, so I didn't have a job, this was going to be my job. And so it felt like I couldn't turn any job down.
Yeah.
And it felt like you almost don't have any power in any of the relationships because you're so desperate for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had stood up more and kind of said, well, I can do that, but that's not forest school. Or actually, do you know, or even some things like to say, do you know what, I don't think I can do a good job of that. Mm-hmm. You're better off finding somebody else.
Yeah.
And almost finding a niche quicker, which I think we have now. I'm very confident now in saying, like, you know, you can do that, but that's outdoor ed, and we can facilitate this way, but really what we do is forest school, and these are the conditions. And actually the word then travels round between, if it's schools or if it's parents, the word travels round that, like, they are the forest school people, rather than, like, do you sort of want something? And it kind of, it puts you in competition with less people, I think. Because if you're trying to be all kinds of outdoor things, then you are competing with brownies, scouts, beavers, cubs.
Yeah.
You know, any bushcraft things, you're potentially trying to compete with all of them. And you're not going to be better than all of them for all children. You know, there are some children who forest school is not right for them. Cubs and beavers is.
Yeah.
They need that structure, and they need that kind of relationship with an adult. And so I think I wish earlier on I had stuck to my guns, I guess is the phrase.
Yeah.
And said, I can't do that and keep calling it forest school, or I'm not the right person for that.
Yeah, I think I would also have said to myself that, I would have reminded myself that there's no kind of one set way of doing forest school, and that you've got to find what suits you. So when I realised, for example, that I love story and storytelling, and that's something that I've been interested in forever, since before I started Forest School. And once I started weaving that into my sessions, I felt a lot more at home. And I felt at the beginning, which I think a lot of new people feel, which is, oh, you know, I've got to be using tools, and I've got to, like, that's Forest School, I've got to, that's what the basis of my sessions has got to be, it's, you know, what tools are we using this week? And that actually a place where I could blend Forest School with a bit of stuff I had already been doing and I was interested in, so weaving story into each of my sessions made me feel a lot more at home, made me feel like, well, this is my thing, actually, I found my thing that I do, and that really helped.
And I think that whether you realise it or not, but the kids will pick up on that.
Definitely.
And there are so many people that I see that are unconfident with using tools, but they feel like they need to be doing, and I'm using inverted commas, Forest School.
Yeah.
And so they end up, the whole vibe then changes, because you haven't got a relaxed adult who's kind of, you know, you and I are at this point where we'd kind of go, okay, tools, yeah, okay, I know exactly how they work, I know how to set it up. Most children I can, you know, use tools safely with, and be very calm about it. But if you were worried about, say, whittling, for example, and then the kids will feel you clam up.
Yeah.
And that's probably true of lots of new people in lots of different situations. It's like, maybe only try and do one new thing in your session.
Yeah.
And I think, rather than throwing it in and go, do you know what, you're going to cook bread and you're going to whittle and you're going to do this in your session. Like, I've never done any of those.
Mm.
And then, well, I like half the time when we're here and you go, should we cook some bread? And you go, yeah. That kind of ended up taking the session.
Yeah.
Because the fire wasn't right today, or the kids were interested in mixing the flour for longer, and not trying to push yourself into, do 9 new things that you've never done before.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Feeling comfortable, I guess, in your own skin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think those are the big ones that I would tell myself.
Yep.
Starting out. And then they're different. There are maybe some different things that I would tell myself personally. So there might be less things that people can take away. But I think trying to work out earlier on, a bit like saying that I was going to just do Forest School. I think earlier on I would have liked to have come up with a, even just for myself, a, like, this is how you're going to behave, almost. Treating myself like an employee.
Yeah.
And I think coming out of teaching, I did need a bit of, like, you know, two fingers up, I run my own thing now, yeah. I can wear shorts if I want to work. But, and I've since come round and I'm like, you know, now I'm scarily at the other end, where we now schedule staff meetings and have, like, weekly agendas and who's responsible for what. And I sometimes, Antonia, my wife, is like, I remember you coming home from school and saying that you hated staff meetings,
yeah.
And you are here now giving extra time to make sure that this staff meeting you're doing goes, yeah, differently. And, like, you know, stuff where I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, if I got mud on my clothes, that doesn't matter. I'm like, actually, kind of, maybe sometimes it does, depending on who you're going to meet. And because that's the thing, isn't it? We, not only are we Forest School leaders, but we run the business. So sometimes you and I need to kind of look slightly more smart, as much as we can try. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe I'm not explaining that well. I do know what you mean. I think I am increasingly caring less about that.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm just becoming an old skanky woman of the woods a lot more, just in general. So I don't ever really feel that. I don't really care if I go to a bank meeting covered in crap. I think sometimes you say to me, I'm like, have I still got chocolate on my face? And you go, yeah, no, you do, like, too much to go and pick up your kids,
yeah,
from school. And I'm like, nah, be all right. There's so I think you're more aware of it than I am.
Well, maybe I consider my audience in a different way, and I, you know, we wish we all lived in a world where appearance didn't matter and we judged each other on what we do and what we say, but we would be lying if we said that we don't make some judgment and treat some people differently based on how they look. And I think I'm aware that there are some scenarios where... Well, okay, so here's the thing that I am very aware of, is that, like, I am a man working in predominantly early years childcare, and I have a big beard, and I'm of a reasonable size. If I'm not considerate of how I carry myself and how I move around, I'm aware that I could come off a lot more threatening.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, and for parents, even though it would be like, well, he wasn't inappropriate, he wasn't doing all of that, there's a vibe that you can give off.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can, I think maybe that's what I would say to myself. If I was going back, I would say, try and think of what do you want people to say about you, not just they do really good forest school, but kind of who's going to say that you do really good forest school, and how are they going to, I don't know, maybe that's something that I have to consider as a man in childcare, that's not so much of an issue.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, I think.
Maybe that's the next one then. Okay.
Yeah.
So, the question that you don't know is, if you were on a desert island, who would, one person, will go dead or alive, you don't have to necessarily know them, who would you want to be with you?
Oh, blimey. Are you saying no spouses, partners, children allowed? Because that's, you know, that's going to be the obvious answer, isn't it?
I think that depends on your goal. So I
survival.
Was looking. So I was looking at a desert island as two different. In my head, there's two scenarios there. There's who would I want to get me off the island and back to civilization quickly. Yeah. And who would I want if I was stuck there and there's nowhere to go?
Right.
Because I think I'd want a very... If I was stuck there forever, I think I would want my wife to be there. Because I think long term, you know, she's the most important person. Excluding Baron. But I think, that's who... If I had to be stuck with there. But... And she will have, I don't think, any qualms about me saying that. If the objective was to get off the island, she'd be bloody useless. Like, I mean, she'd be good at some things, but I think we would approach tasks in such a different way. I think I would want to be like, let's make a raft and do whatever it is this week. Let's just make something that keeps us dry to sleep in, and then let's put all the attention into the raft. And I think she would be more down the line of, well, I think we should kind of improve this and make sure we've got food first. And I'm very single track once I get onto an idea, and I think that would get frustrating. So I think somebody that would help me facilitate, if it was to get off the island quickly, I think somebody that would facilitate my style of, like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And obviously being vegan, stuck on a desert island, is a thing that I'm constantly being, you know, accused of. What would you do on a desert island?
Really? So, people actually ask that.
Oh yeah.
Well,
who would you go for?
So, well, you know, I've got to pick Ray, haven't I? Ray would make a great canoe.
Do you know what? It took me a second to realise that you went Mears and not from Star Wars, and I was trying to work out.
Oh no, she'd also be cool.
Because I didn't know. Well, we didn't talk about fictional people.
Ah, okay.
Go on, Ray Mears.
Ray Mears.
Do you know what? I don't know if he would be. I don't know if Ray would be my pick.
Well, no, but even if we didn't get off the island, he'd just, like, you know, make us some nice food, feel good.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting person, Ray Mears, because I think he's more on that present. My feeling is that he's more on that scale of presenter than someone like who's the bloke that wrote the SAS handbook? I want to say his name was, like, Woolly Thompson or something.
Don't know.
But there's, you know, more of the SAS type people who might not be great presenters, but probably have got more skills.
Yeah.
Whereas Ray Mears, although he can do all those things, I wonder how much he... Do you know, like, when he makes the canoe paddle?
Yeah.
Could he still make a canoe paddle 3 years on? Or was it a skill that he had?
Of course he could.
You've got a lot of faith in Ray.
I do.
I think if it was, I think if I had to get off the island, I'd go for someone like Andy McNab.
Yeah.
Someone very calculated and very, he'd got more knowledge than me, but would also be calculated enough, and I would trust his judgment on this is how much water you can drink, or this is the priority. I think I would trust that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Cracking. Right. Cool. Well, we'll have a think about what to talk about next week.
Yep.
Podcast is now up on all the good places, on iTunes and on Anchor, and I think it might even be on Spotify now.
Yeah.
Which would be good. Let us know if you've got any questions or you want us to talk about stuff. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.